This is the May 2 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists for the day include Greg Johnson at TGM. That's TotalGrainMarketing.com. He's at the elevator here in Champaign County, Illinois. Arlen Suderman joins us from StoneAxe at StoneAxe.com in Kansas City, Missouri. And Mike Zuzlow is here from GlobalComResearch.com out of Atchison, Kansas. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. Find us online. Listen to us on demand anytime you'd like at willag.org. Or WILLAG.org. As usual, we'll get a list of items that we should discuss for the day. Greg Johnson, I'll start with you. What's on your list?
I've got two things, and I label them uncertainty. We have uncertainty over the weather and the final yield in South America, both Argentina and Brazil, due to various factors. And then we also now have a labor strike at the dock workers' labor strike in Argentina. And that typically only lasts a couple of days, but with a new president trying to change economic policy, will this last for longer than a couple of days? And what kind of impact will that have on Argentine exports and consequently U.S. exports? So I think those are two uncertainties that we probably should discuss at some point.
Arlen Suderman from StoneAxe in Kansas City on your list.
Monetary policy, Federal Reserve really kind of trying to walk with one foot on each shore right now, and that's creating some additional uncertainty in the markets and having an impact on the commodities. The other thing would be, as we look at South American production, we came out with our new customer survey for corn and soybeans, and the numbers are interesting relative to where Canabi's at versus USDA.
And finally, Mike Zuzla at GlobalResearch.com.
Only other thing to add to that, Todd, is the idea that we've been able to build upon the wheat-led rally from April with a new four-month high in the corn. Wondering if the fund shorts are getting nervous at this point.
All right, let's start there. Do you think fund shorts are getting nervous at this point? And does that mean there's more left in the market?
I think there is or could be more left in the market. And I say could be because I want to be within compliance. If I were by myself, I would say yes, I think there is. Because if we retrace the breadcrumbs to January, February time period, Arlen hit upon a huge factor, the Fed going neutral. And then the other big factor was China. And we had just made, interestingly enough, this past week, a new four-month high in the Hong Kong Equity Index. And I think there is some reasoning and causation for the fact that we have seen both a new high in the corn and a new high in Hong Kong led by the wheat. The idea, and this was in some of the major poultry industry investor updates and quarterly earnings numbers in slides this past week about the surplus of grains coming into 23-24 and carrying that into 24-25 and building upon that surplus. And I think whether you look at the hard red wheat belt in the United States or the dryness in Russia or what's happening in Argentina and in France and a variety of major producing countries, it seems to me that the likelihood of building that surplus up from 23-24 is a lot lower than it was when the funds started putting on their big short positions, Todd.
Why do you think that's the case?
Well, I think mainly weather, but I would also say we have really hung in there on the domestic and the foreign demand when it comes to the corn. But I think the idea was that we would have big acres and big yield in the northern hemisphere, especially. And I think the trade kind of tried to put to bed South America. I heard a lot, and I'm sure the other guys did too, 2 months ago of, yeah, maybe Brazil's having some tough weather, but well, look at Argentina. They're really going to come roaring back. And all of a sudden the leaf hopper came out and started to change that dynamic. Now, big rains in southern Brazil and still some issues in Argentina for their harvest as well. Weather-wise, I think Mother Nature played her trump card on us, and I think the funds should be more nervous. We'll see what it looks like at the end of the week here.
Okay, I'll come back to that, but I would like to focus on China for just a bit because you did mention the economy. Arlen Suderman, how concerned are you that the Chinese economy is slowing down enough that its growth rate won't allow the continuation of its import of soybeans and corn into the country to grow. And you could couple that with what their management of those acres might look like.
Yeah, I'd be more concerned if we were talking copper than if I was talking about the food commodities. What we're seeing there is still strong demand. In fact, what we see them doing is building reserves. In fact, they just bought recently 3.8 million metric tons of Argentine soybeans, we believe, for the reserves, trying to build them back up. And we see this really with most of their essential commodities. It seems to be geopolitical in nature that the demand is there, just not from the United States. You can talk geopolitical tensions between us, but frankly, it comes down to price. China has always been a value buyer and wanting to buy where it's the cheapest. And frankly, with a strong dollar, and not just a strong dollar, but weakness in the currency of our competitors, there's quite a price advantage right now from buying from our competitors, buying from Brazil, who's also a member of the BRICS coalition. And so we're seeing very strong movement right now, even with the economic problems there, to meet their demand needs while also stocking up reserves.
And I'm not certain that this actually works quite into the labor strike at the Rosario port, but it may, Greg, because I suspect that that's primarily soybean meal, but I don't know that's the case, whether they're loading whole or meal out of that port or both. And some of that, of course, would be headed to Asia at some point. Rosario was the number two exporting porter is on the planet behind New Orleans. And number three is Sao Paulo. So two of them are in South America. Can you give me your view of what that strike means to the Chinese as it relates to their imports and or talk about what it means to the potential export of U.S. based commodities?
Yeah, Argentina is about 26% harvested on beans, about 20% harvested on corn. So they typically export a lot of soybean meal. It's primarily meal this time of year. So the fact that the port, the dock workers have threatened to strike and actually have gone on strike and have been supported by a couple of other unions down there. Like I say, typically they do this every year just to kind of prove a point. They go on strike for a couple of days and then they come back and everybody kind of anticipates that. But with a new president, it's kind of hard to say, you know, whether this is your typical 2-day, 3-day strike or if this could last longer. And with harvest just getting underway down there, that could slow down, you know, have ships waiting to get loaded. And, you know, the demurrage charges are high. And if it lasts too long or if the, you know, buyers think it's going to last too long, they could divert some ships up here into the U.S. You know, we kind of saw that on Thursday, you know, with the May bean futures really leading the charge. The spreads really strengthened. And so I think there's some maybe cash business behind this. So that's certainly something that we'll need to keep an eye on.
Arlen, is he right? Is there cash business behind it?
There is some cash strength behind it, but it seems to be far more than that. Right now, what we see is we've got corn, soy meal, and wheat all above the 100-day moving average, and this fits in with some of the money flow as well. And so we're seeing a lot of money flow related buying there. Now, the funds had already gone into a net long position in meal, so they're adding to that as they exit some of the remaining short positions and taking on some longs related to the charts. So some of that is a part of it as well overall. And I think it just fits overall with the general condition of expectations that we're going to see increasing demand for commodities and not as abundant of supplies as what was first thought.
So you would agree with Mike on the supply situation across the planet then?
What we're generally seeing is economic growth is there, and particularly as we came out of the Fed meeting, the Fed has clearly indicated it's not going to try to slow down the economy. It's going to let things go in this election year. And if the U.S. economy is going strong, the concern is whether China's exporting disinflation is going to have enough effect on slowing things down. But at this point, it really doesn't seem to be that much. And so what we're seeing with the geopolitical risks around the world is a little bit more emphasis on stocking up. And that tends to increase demand and be inflationary. And that's kind of the way the funds are looking at it right now.
Can you discuss, Mike, some more of the macroeconomics that you're watching? How do issues in the Middle East, the war in Ukraine, if at all, play into this function of stocking up, or is it just an econ function itself?
Well, I think with China, it is, as Arlen said, more of a geopolitical situation. And I think the trade relationship and the election year for the United States is working into their calculus as to how they're going to handle this market, along with the almost record low Japanese yen. The problem with China right now is they probably want to stimulate their economy a little bit more, but they can't risk elevating their currency because they have to keep it cheap with the Japanese yen. So the fact that we saw a new three-week low in the U.S. dollar spot index on Thursday, Todd, along with a pretty sharp short covering rally in the yen, if we can flip those and establish those two mechanisms as a trend here in the next couple weeks, I think May could provide us with some excellent opportunities and some hedging opportunities for both whatever you have left over for 23, corn and beans and wheat, and also 24, 25. This is the I think, major key in this market right now, because the model year I was using at the beginning of April was the idea that, like 2009, given what we were looking at with this extra heavy short fund position and looking at the weather as not being ideal, and now it's outright very questionable in about 50% of Russia's wheat production. And so it's a substantial area that still even missed some good rains this past 48 hours. Now we have the possibility, I think, where the 2009 model year could even be built upon, because from late April, early May, up to the end of the year of 2009, the U.S. dollar went lower pretty much all the way the rest of the year. And that's kind of what I'd like to see. And I think it should be that way, kind of what dovetailing on what Arlen was talking about. The macro side of the equation is the Fed is kind of trapped, because they got to keep the financial market humming along, Wall Street humming along, because that, I think, in my opinion, especially with the 1.6% GDP, is the only thing keeping us out of a recession right now outright. And they, too, know it's an election year, even though they are an independent central bank.
Arlen and Mike, I think what you have told me as it relates to trade is that China may be front-loading what their needs are based on the potential change of administrations, while both the Trump and the Biden administrations have been very similar in their current trade policies. With the Trump administration, and then with the Biden administration, but that they are fearful that things could change after the election should there be a second term for President Trump. Is that where you think the Chinese are landing, Arlen?
Well, it's interesting. At the recent IMF conference, it brought in a lot of people from the East Coast, experts on the political and on the economic side. As they talked about the politics of it, they said basically the Biden and the Trump policies toward Taiwan, toward China, as far as trade, are identical now. And they said that China actually has a respect for Trump because he's someone they can deal with from a standpoint. They understand how to work with him. They understand how to negotiate with him because they have a relationship with Trump. Whereas with Biden, they don't know what to expect. And so therefore, China's actually more nervous about a continuation of Biden than they are of the Trump administration, because at least they know what they get and how to have negotiations with Trump versus Biden. That's just what kind of came out of that conference. So, you know, I think more of it probably has to do with China's desire to reunify Taiwan and the fact that they have a new president coming on board now that has really committed to independence and that their clock for reunifying Taiwan is getting pushed forward sooner than what they would like. But they know that when they do that, that's going to create problems with trade for the United States. And so they want to build up reserves as much as they can prior to when that is, whenever that is, only they know the timetable of that, so that if we sanction them on trade, that they will still have all the essential commodities that they need, leaning on their coalition members without having to be dependent upon the United States to remove any sanctioned power that the United States might have on them.
Mike, anything to add, or shall I go on?
The only quick thing I'd say is I think the key for this whole discussion from my standpoint as I work through an inflation special report is the big question I had on my mind was, why is gold making all-time record highs if we're in such a deflationary atmosphere like 2015 through 2019? That was the big rub for me 30 days ago. And what I found out so far is that there's a lot of similarities between the United States and the Chinese right now in terms of losing confidence. They're losing confidence in the dollar as a sovereign currency because of what Arlen was talking about the BRIC countries and this new East, new West developing. And also they're losing confidence because the inflation is sticky. It's not going anywhere. It's actually going back up. And so we're starting to get inflation expectations that are elevated. That means it stays around a longer period of time. And I think that had to be worked into the models here just very recently with the money funds. And then they had to pick up probably more commodities. And that's the key to me, because if that's correct, Todd, historically, and this goes back to your Middle East point, if we want a weaker dollar, we typically want a stronger crude oil price as well. So that would be a weaker dollar and a stronger crude oil price should link together and fit together fairly well here in 2024. And I'm talking about elongating this rally and not just having it last through the month of May.
Okay, Greg Johnson, let's come back to some fundamentals of supply and demand at this point. Weather in South America, Rio Grande do Sul, which I think produces about 15% of their soybeans, is somewhere in the very late season or harvest time, and they have been deluged enough such that it probably made traders sit up and take notice. What impact do you suppose this has had or might have?
Rio Grande do Sul is 82% harvested on corn, but only 66% harvested on soybeans. So there's still a third of the crop out in the field, and they had some 7 to 8 inch rains this week. And the mayor or the governor, I'm not sure of the exact title, but an official of Rio Grande do Sul said that this was the worst disaster that they've ever had. Another one said it was the worst since 1941. So, and there's more rain in the forecast. So, yeah, just when we think we know what the yield's going to be in some of these countries, it, you know, as they always say, until it gets into the bin, that's still a moving target. So I think there is some potential for a reduction in the yield, both corn and soybeans coming out of Brazil and Argentina.
So, Greg, with all of that rainfall and the river system flowing southward there back into Argentina through the port of Rosario, do you suppose, and there are some dams along this river, that flooding could be an issue for them? I don't know that I've ever heard that's the case out of South America and the Rosario port. We've heard about the dry conditions, but flooding would be an issue as well.
Yeah, this is something new. I mean, I've been in the business for almost 40 years, and I'm trying to remember if there ever has been a year where there's been flooding issues in southern Brazil. I can't think of any, so this might be uncharted territory. I guess I'm going to go back to uncertainty, and uncertainty usually means higher highs and lower lows, or, you know, wider swings in the markets. And so this just may be a pricing opportunity, I guess, is the way I'm looking at it.
Arlen, if I remember correctly, this is a bungee port in Rosario, and it has had issues in the past. Do you know much about it and what might be the issues they could deal with?
Yeah, I believe Cargill and COFCO both have ports there as well, or at least facilities there as well. And overall, we're seeing fairly normal activity there today, although we're expecting you know, water levels. I think it can handle some fairly significant water levels. So at this point, we're not seeing anything. As I was just talking to my contact down there, we're not seeing anything right now that would suspend operations. But it's certainly something worth keeping our eyes on.
Okay, and let's turn our attention then, Mike Zuzlow, to planting pace here in the United States. It's been moving very well, and we'll know more on Monday about how this past week went. Farmers in general are where? I think you've told us in the northern parts of Illinois and other parts of the eastern Corn Belt have been lagging. What are you still hearing from them?
Yeah, I talked to a Douglas County producer today, as a matter of fact, and he had about 80% of his soybeans in and had maybe one more day before he got washed out, about 45 to 50% of his corn in. He thought that maybe around the county and up towards Champaign, probably about 30, 35% of the corn in overall, maybe 60% of the soybeans in overall. I think that's, generally speaking, going to get you in the central part east of the Mississippi River of the Corn Belt until you get to eastern Indiana and Ohio, where some of my Indiana and Ohio clients haven't really turned a wheel at all yet at this point, especially in the northern parts, Todd. So while we're running in, you know, the Nebraska area, southern Nebraska and northeast Kansas area, running 80, 90% complete, some guys that have a lot of tile are done. But I think they're the crop conditions planting numbers on Monday, I think are going to be extremely important to watch on next Monday, because it looks cooler and wetter. And I do think the trade got a hold of that. And to Greg's earlier point about the bull spreads, I'm not so sure the end users may not have come into this market because they're seeing a little bit of a slowdown in the central and eastern Corn Belt in the next 10 days. Because, I mean, even Illinois was 9 points behind last year, Kentucky 12, Missouri 11, Indiana, I think 9. And so I think maybe they're getting a little extra coverage at this point because of this cooler, wetter weather instead of warmer, wetter weather. So we'll see how it plays out over the next 10 days or so. I think with hard red wheat, corn, and Russian wheat as well, what I'm picking up pretty strongly from clients in Europe and clients here, May 15 is going to be a tough time if they don't get rains for their wheat belt. And if they stay out of the fields for the corn, they're going to start really getting nervous.
Greg Johnson, next Friday, USDA will release its first projections of the new crop year in the WASDE, the World Agricultural Supply and Demand Estimates. What is the trade expecting at this point? And will they make any adjustments in acreage, which seems unlikely, I suppose, and or potential yield?
Yeah, I agree. I think it's very unlikely that they change the acreage number yet. That could come, you know, on the June 30th acreage planting intentions. So the government's probably going to come out with 90 million acres. That's where they were with the planting intentions report in March. So 90 million acres, and, you know, trend line is probably in the 180, 181 category. So if you multiply that out, and if you just extrapolate demand as unchanged, which I think is the best you can do right now. We're not seeing increased feed demand. We're not seeing increased ethanol demand. We are seeing a little bit better export demand when it comes to corn. So, you know, you could, you know, maybe bump that up 100 million bushels. But the bottom line is you're still looking at a carryout with a 2 in front of it, 2.0, 2.1 billion bushels. It's going to take less acres, or it's going to take a weather problem and yield reduction to get that under 2 billion bushels. So this report that comes out Friday probably isn't going to give us any bullish surprises. It's still just going to say, assuming normal planting acres and assuming normal weather, normal yield, we're probably looking at about a 2 billion bushel carryout.
Arlen Suderman, what do you have in your S&D tables?
Yeah, I would generally agree with that. I mean, you vary the numbers here and there. We pretty much know what production's going to be because they're going to go with the acreage from the March 28 survey numbers. They're going to go with the yield from their outlook form based on history. That's what we expect, which is a 181, giving you just shy of a 14.9 billion bushel crop. And then it comes down to demand. So right now, as we're looking at our ending stocks of, say, 2.1 billion bushels, the market really doesn't care unless you drop below 1.4 to 1.5 billion. So if you look at right now, our sources in Argentina are saying with the leafhopper problem, creating the disease problems there. They may be down 7 to 10 million metric tons. Brazil, our estimate went up a million metric tons for them because of better than expected conditions in Mato Grosso that more than offset losses in Mato Grosso do Sul and Paraná, but it's still early in the grain fill stage and even pollination problems to the south. So let's say we drop 5 to 10 million metric tons and maybe a worst case scenario there. That still doesn't justify getting us to the point of rationing demand here with higher prices. But what it does do is remove the buffer, removes the safety margin. So then, therefore, this year's weather in the Midwest becomes far more critical. And so the market's much more likely to put in a weather premium if we start having problems. And I'd agree with the comments earlier that, well, you really can't justify a sustained rally at this point. I think some end users are saying it's awfully wet out there. It reminds me of 2019. The setup that caused 2019 was totally different than it is this year. But if I'm an end user, I say, you know, prices are down here pretty cheap. Maybe I need to extend some coverage right now just in case it turns into something like that. And I think that's a lot of what we're seeing fundamentally on the support for buying right now. In addition to the money flow things we talked earlier. When we talk soybeans, though, it's still a different thing. I mean, with soybeans, I'm looking at ending stocks with a five handle, and I'm probably more bearish than others because I have a more bearish outlook on exports for the coming year with continued growth in Brazil. I think that's the wild card. But even if I use a little better export number, I'm still not getting to the point of being tight enough to ration demand with higher prices. It just simply says we have to pay attention to weather and what the losses actually are in Argentina and southern Brazil, and then what kind of growing season do we end up with in the Midwest this year.
You're more bearish than others with a five handle. That may be an understatement for the year at this point. Mike Suzzolo, what kind of supply and demand figures do you use at this time?
Yeah, the only thing to add to that, Todd, is I think what started this rally and put the funds out of position thanks to Mother Nature was that we were already at a 10-year low on the world wheat stocks to use ratios. We've been talking about that between you and I for probably 3 or 4 months now. We could be in that same situation as Arlen was talking about the corn. If we lose 10 million metric tons and demand doesn't change all of a sudden, because we've been flatlined at about 26.5% to 26% in corn stocks to use ratios globally for the last 5 years, essentially. And so we could be at a 5-year low after that report. And then all of a sudden the trade says, wow, we're relatively tight. And then all of a sudden, as Arlen said, the Northern Hemisphere means a lot more. And France is not happy right now. And I've been talking to some people over there in that part of the country, the corn country over there, and they're really starting to stress about their ability to get in the fields. And other countries are as well. And I think this is where you could have some dominoes fall here. And I think this where it really does go back to the ultimate question. What you said is, can we continue higher after the USDA report comes out? Well, it depends on what price we're at. I mean, your lead month corn has little resistance on a monthly chart until the January high, close to 475. So if we're up in that area ahead of the report, then it's going to be harder to feed the bull. And I think that's what we want to keep in mind as we go through this period.
Most producers will not have marketed either corn or soybeans for new crop. Given what we've talked about, there may be some friendly sentiment they've heard, maybe even bullish sentiment from time to time. However, I suspect that all of you are of a mind that there should be some marketing done and sooner rather than later for new crop. Am I reading that wrong? And Greg Johnson, I'll start with you.
No, I think you're exactly right. We have to keep in mind the big picture. We're starting with a 2 billion bushel plus carryout, and assuming a normal crop, you were still looking at a 2 billion bushel carryout on corn. Now, the good news is May and June, seasonality-wise, that's the time when we typically get rallies, because what if we have a weather problem and what if the yield is down? So the funds you know, have been kind of fat and sassy, comfortable being short. Maybe they're rethinking that, you know, with the first sign of potential weather problems. But we have to also keep in mind the farmers are still sitting on about 45% of the old crop corn. So there's a lot of resistance in this market. If the funds do decide to cover and corn goes up 10 or 20 cents, I think the farmers will meet that with sales on both old crop and new crop. Big picture, you know, you have to set targets. My target is $4 if everything goes well on December corn, and $5 if we have some issues here, something short of a full-blown drought this summer. So if the range is $4 to $5 and December corn closed at $4.80, that kind of, you know, gives you your marketing plan. We've got maybe 10 or 20 cents upside, but if we don't sell corn or take advantage of that, the downside potential is relatively steep. And, you know, we spent a lot of time this year in the low fours. And if the carryout's similar, I don't know why we wouldn't spend a lot of time in the low fours next fall and on into the winter. So, yes, this next 2 months is going to be the pricing opportunity when people say, you know, we could have weather problems. And I think that's pricing opportunity. We need to take advantage of that.
Are you pricing soybeans too?
Probably not yet. And I understand Harlan's thing. I think eventually we could be sub $11 beans. But again, it's April, May. We're kind of right in the middle of my range. My range is $11 on the downside, $12.50 on the upside, and we're in the $11.75, $11.80 category. So we're right in the middle. So I guess I'd like to see that get a little bit closer to the top end of the range. But corn is already in the upper half of the range, in my opinion. And so if we can get a little seasonality, a little fun covering, short covering, I think we might have an opportunity to sell corn first. And who knows, if beans go up 30 cents again, all of a sudden we're looking at some pretty decent prices.
Mike?
I'm less worried about the corn from a demand standpoint domestically with the EPA and moving on the E15 exemption this year, and also the new GREET update that we got this week. So I'd probably be a little higher than Greg. I've got an overvalue on Dee's corn of 550. There's a gap around 515 on my chart at least, and I think 5 to 515 is a great place to start. And if that's your worst sale this year, I think the key, like last year, is that are you going to hedge for a weather supply rally? Yes, I think that's what you want to do. If we turn into a demand rally, that's a different story, but we don't have that yet. And we have those frictions with US China going into the election. And we also have the high path avian influenza that I'm sure Arlen and I are alike, being out in Western Corn Belt and the Plain States cattle country. My phone's been ringing off the hook. His probably has too, with what's been going on here in the fear that we have of a liquidation phase again if this gets out of hand and consumers don't take it. We got good news from USDA on Thursday, and that was a real breather, a sigh of relief. So 5-5-15 start on new crop for me. 1205 is my overvalue on Nove beans, so I'm real close to starting there.
And Arlen?
Yeah, I would tend to agree with that. I think the real wild card here, I'm going to add to Mike's comments on the wheat that I think will have a spillover effect on the corn, is when you look at world wheat supplies among the major exporters outside of Russia and outside the United States, they're at historically very tight levels. But the market's not been focused on that because Russia's been dumping record amounts of cheap wheat onto the world market. And because they've had the supplies, they've been trying to pay for the war effort. If something happens to take away that Russian supply, be it a ship sinking or be it a drought in the southern production areas that has a big impact on production, so they can't affect the world price by continuously dumping that record amounts of cheap wheat on it, suddenly the market starts focusing on the tightness of the supplies, and suddenly the U.S. is needed again for exports. And if that's the case, you see an elevation of wheat prices, which starts to affect and support corn as well. But that said, I think we're still on the defense. We've had several years where you could hit home runs in marketing. I think the time now is to focus on hitting singles and doubles now that we're in baseball season. and focus on getting those victories, getting those wins, and just trying to protect the equity that we built in the farm over the last few years and make sure that we've guarded that, selling the rallies at this point until or unless something changes in these dynamics.
Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. You may listen to the whole of the program anytime you'd like. You can do that on our website at willag.org or search it out in your favorite podcast applications. We thank our panelists for the day. They include Greg Johnson of TGM, that's TotalGrainMarketing.com, Arlen Suderman from StoneX.com, and Mike Zuzlo at GlobalComResearch.com. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.